So Puerto Rico is a beautiful place. It's a lush island. It's great for surfing. It's got a culture. Like you feel like you've really gone somewhere far and you don't need a passport, which honestly, I do really enjoy. It's a beautiful island. The people are amazing. The food is amazing. The water, the beaches, the vibe. It's a great place. It really is. In Puerto Rico, you'll taste the influence of Spanish, African, and native Taíno traditions, sometimes all in the same dish. Puerto Rican chefs and restaurants put their passion into every bite. Puerto Rico is an excellent destination for food, which may not be a well-known fact. Whether it's a five-star restaurant or local favorite spot, no one does food like Puerto Rico. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There we go. We're getting better.
How are you?
I'm sitting here playing with buttons and then I pop up. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for doing this. I'm excited to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
We are, I believe, of the same generation. I came up watching your comedy, so I was super excited when you agreed to come on.
Oh, all right. Good.
Does anyone call you Scott? What do your friends call you?
Yeah, you know, my grandmother still called me Carrot Top. It was odd, but yes, mostly my friends. She would say, "This is my grandson, Carrot Top," and I'd say, "It's Scott, Grandma." But she never got past that. But yeah, most people, friendly people, I know call me Scott. Yes,
they do. Okay.
Well, it used to be when I, you know, being in the before the internet, when someone would say Scott on the street, you'd be like, "Oh, they must know me. They must be friends." And now it's like, "Oh, they looked you up," kind of thing. So.
Oh, that's so funny! Right? Yeah. Okay. So, do you like that the name Carrot Top stuck, or is it like, has it been a blessing or
a blessing
and a curse?
like a blessing and a curse. I mean, yeah, because I could have had Queen Latifah, but I missed that opportunity. So I know. I mean, it's been a blessing. It works fine for me. I feel kind of, you know, I've had it so long now, the moniker. So I don't quite think anything different. Like if I had a choice to do a better, cooler one, would I? I don't know. But the Carrot Top's good. Everybody brings me, you know, everything with carrots, you know. You know, just having Easter, like dinner, I had to bring a carrot cake. And I said, I get it.
Oh, my God. This is your holiday. You just passed your big holiday. Wow. Yeah, oh, my God. I didn't even think of that. Okay. Wow.
I didn't either. So they brought the cake and I said, oh, another carrot cake. Thank you so much. It's funny, right? Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that original. That's funny. Right. Well, first of all, where do you live? You live in Vegas or you just go there for your residence?
I work in Vegas and I have a house in Florida. So I go back and forth. But I'm mostly of my time is spent in Vegas because I work, you know, 6 nights a week. So most of the time is spent here in Vegas. But then on my holidays, I go to Florida.
It's funny because I was talking to Flava Flav of all people who lives in Vegas. And I was thinking now, do you see a lot of people you know in Vegas? Is it like a different version of L.A. where you're just seeing like famous people?
I know Flav real well. He's always at the show. He comes out. He hangs out. I always see him around. We kind of, you know, there's a little camaraderie among Vegas people. You know, you got a bite to eat with Chris Angel or David Copperfield or whatnot. But it's
so there is a whole world there. There's like a subculture there of just like all these
There's a little bit of culture here. I mean, not tremendous amounts, but you know, the Vegas community kind of is cool. And when everyone knows each other, it's a small town, especially all the entertainers, you know, We all know each other, so it's fun.
And you've been doing this for 17 years in Vegas, this gig. Like, how have you thought of stopping? Does it keep evolving? Like, what's that experience like?
Yeah, the evolution is really the key to the whole show. I mean, and it's been, that's only 18 at the Luxor. Prior to that, there was 10 at the MGM Grand and one at Bally's. So almost 30 years in Vegas. But yeah, the show is definitely, it seems to be more fun now for me than it ever was prior, just because I asked George Carlin this one time. I said, you know, what's it like to finally get it, you know, like to get it. And he said, get what? I said, you know, you got your job, you got what you're doing, you get up there now, it's more fun. And he said, I ain't got nothing. I'm always working. And that was a question I asked him like 20 years ago. And he's right. I think I got the stage thing down more, but the idea of keeping the show fresh and keeping it going for all these years, more and more, you got to evolve and make, you know, new jokes, new content, always in reinventing yourself in the show. And I do it nightly. Yeah.
Like challenging yourself. You have to feel a little bit of pain and like be a little afraid.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I change it almost every night. There's one, even if it's one joke or one reference or one, you know, whether I'm talking about Tyson getting in the ring or anything topical, it immediately goes into the show.
Interesting, because you could coast because it's not the same people, but as an artist, right, you want to like challenge yourself and just like do it differently. I've always found that interesting. I did stand-up comedy one night in New York City at the New York Comedy Club, and I've always found it interesting that a comedian will go, you know, downstairs at the Comedy Cellar and do the act and then go upstairs next door. Yep. And it sort of sounds like the same act. And I've always wondered if anybody feels, I don't know, not like a fraudulence about it. For example, you'll hear like Amy Schumer's on The Tonight Show and she's saying something but you just happen to have seen her show and it sounds like it's new when she's saying it to him, like it's something she just thought of.
Right.
But you, so like, does anyone feel like Emperor has no clothes-ish about that experience? Because for me, I would feel weird. I feel weird when someone I'm sitting with heard me tell the same story to two people and it's not even like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. And that does happen with comedy a lot. And that's why I think the process of them writing and keeping the show current, fresh is one, that's one way to do it. And secondly, when I do shows like The Tonight Show and whatever shows now exist, you know, when I would do them, I couldn't do repeat stuff that I'd already done on the show prior. So that was always a challenge too, especially for someone like me that did a lot of television. So I would always have to churn out new stuff because when they called, they say, you know, we want to do a set. I can't do the same set. So that would force me to.
Oh, wow. They want exclusive content. That's a thing they ask for. Well, they want exclusive.
Exclusive on their particular show. Yeah. If I had done it on Jay Leno, they said, we just saw you do it on Jay. We don't want you. Oh, sorry. Not on Jay. It wouldn't matter if we did it on Jay. Just their show. They didn't want me to come back because I do the show a lot. So they want new. So, but even my show here, like last night, I had a wonderful crowd. I got done and some folks came back and they had seen the show exactly a year ago because it was her birthday. And she said, oh my God, the show has changed so much. Like it's changed so much. It's so much new. And I thought that's the favorite thing to hear, you know, from an audience member is that, one, it's good and you want it to be good, but you know, that there is a lot of change and that people love that. Like, well, almost the whole show is new. Like, so they can,
and then it's still good. It's good then, it's good now, it's good different.
Right. So it wouldn't be, and she even said it wouldn't have been like, even if you had done the same show I'd seen, it would have been funny. But, and your show goes by so fast, I wouldn't have remembered it. So there's ups and downs of that too. I mean, a lot of times show moves fast, so they don't have time to remember. I don't even remember what the heck I've done sometimes.
Now, question, because we're talking about like people who get imposter or emperor, do you like think about if you think you're funny? Is it more of like a honed craft? Like, are some people just funny on stage, but they're not actually funny? Like, what determines in your mind, like who you think is funny? Is it different? Is it all different styles? Because I know that I was reading that like your stereotypical style, what people would say of yours is that you use props or like Kevin Nealon tells one long story or Jerry Seinfeld's aggravated. Like, so what determines if someone's really funny? Because I've met stand-ups that don't seem funny.
Yeah.
I know what I mean?
I know a lot of them that aren't. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, It definitely comes down to, I don't know. I have friends in the business that I've been doing it for a long time, and I'm always dumbfounded. I don't necessarily find them funny, but the crowd must, the people that book them must. I find things differently funny. And you mentioned styles of comedy. Like when my show is completely different than any other comic. So if you see my show, and I address it in the show, I said, people talk about who influenced me. And I said, this is a good question because I have a weird show. Everybody laughs. And I said, who do you think influenced me? And I say certain names, I'd say Richard Pryor. And then I would say similar, right? And that gets a laugh because my show is not similar to Richard Pryor's at all. And I say George Carlin. And they start, I said, now George Carlin was, you know, if you break down my show, it's like almost exactly George Carlin, except because I don't do all props. I do a lot of stand up. And the stories that he would say it's kind of like how I wanted to write when I got into comedy. I wanted to be like George Carlin. He was clever and he was observational and he had these jokes. Now, last night, funny you should mention, I came home from work and I had my Instagram and I don't know, I didn't follow it, it was on a feed. And it came up on Stephen Wright. Now, Stephen Wright is another one of these guys who, when you talk about different in styles, you know, some people think, you know, is he funny? And that's really, I know him, that's really his style, but he is so, his delivery and style, he said something like, I won't give it justice, but he said, He started by saying, it's a wonderful evening. What a wonderful night for an evening. You know, he paused, everybody paused. He just, and he says, I was hitchhiking one day and a hearse stopped. And everyone kind of pauses. And he says, no thanks, pal. I'm not going that far. Like, it's just brilliant. It's like brilliant.
Yeah, writing. I agree. It's subtle and quiet can be subtle. And he's my generation too.
Right. It would work for him and for his style. But if I tried doing that, it would be epic fail. So, you know, I've got a style of speed about my show that he does. He has a style of speed, or as I always call it, a cadence. Everybody has a cadence. Seinfeld has a great cadence. And then, you know, it's how other comics, how they write jokes. I have piles of notes here. I write everything from observational stuff normally to, you know, political. You know, I do a thing about, you know, Trump trying to find a vice president. And I do a whole thing where behind me is a big screen and it flips like faces, like a game show.
Or like Tinder, swiping.
Who's my running mate? Let's find out. And he goes, you know, like the game show, and it pops, that pops up on him. So it's going to be him. And I'm like, it's me. You know, are we going to invade? I don't know. Are we going to invade? What are we going to do? I don't know. Should we call G? We should call G. So it's him battling him, which he's kind of doing now. It's just him battling himself, everything. So it gets a great laugh and it's topical and it's current and it's making fun of Trump, but in a fun way. So people enjoy it.
And you brought up TV and like the medium and what shows are left, which I like that you said that because I don't think that everybody, like people older like us, still think TV is TV. And I evolved in the last year and a half just by accident. And really, once you take the blur off, you're like, direct to consumer content is the only way to do things. Like, meaning you could have I have an entire show on TikTok, like not intentionally, but just like I'm eating dumplings. I'm putting my makeup on. Like it's the new television. And I just don't think that everybody, right?
Yeah, it really is. I don't think I watch more of TikToks and more of a podcast than I do television, period. I mean, the only thing I watch at night is my sports. You know, I get home from the show and I put on my sports and I go to dinner or eat my dinner and go to bed.
Yeah, right, you know, I don't even know. I'm stunned when I look at the television. I don't even know where to go, what to do. I'm only on streamers and then you're not seeing the news. Like, it's very jarring.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's interesting.
It is very interesting because I just think a lot of people still are like somebody was. I'm way more financially successful from an entertainment standpoint than when I was on television from social media. And someone was in Australia at an appearance I was at and they were like, oh, when are you going to get back on TV? I'm like, never. I don't want to be on TV. Like, and Mark Cuban said, you know, that Bravo, I think it was, he was like, it's streamers for old people.
Yeah.
That's what he said. It's like, it's interesting.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the way you're talking now, like I'm vibing with what you're saying joke-wise, it doesn't feel prop-ish. Is that something you would pigeonhole into and people think that you still are like sitting there with a big tricycle on stage or something?
Yeah. I mean, there's still some props that are involved in the show, but there's definitely more stand-up than there is props oriented. But there's an energy and there's a style of the show. So there's a lot of the big screen, like I spoke about with the thing. So a lot of that for a punchline as opposed to me holding up a prop. Now, there still are a few props, but way more like video, talking to the video wall, you know, punchline to the crowd, video wall, me, and then a stand-up, just a story about, you know, me looking like Shaun White when I go snowboarding or something. It'll be a whole story, you know.
So like general wackiness that people might like, that is like the new version of props for you.
Yeah.
Like
and I had no problem with people saying, hey, you're a prop comic. But then they see the show and they're like, you know, you're not really like a prop comic. You're kind of like just a comic. I'm like, yeah, which I had no problem being labeled a prop comic because that's how I got my start. But you have to evolve and stuff. But, the show definitely is still Carrot Top. It still has a prop oriented look to it, but people do comment on the fact that I talk a lot. Lady said last night, I said, last time I saw your show, you were like running around. This time you were just talking and telling stories. I liked it. So I was like, oh, okay.
It's funny that it's a world. Like I've my whole life I've been attracted to comedy, like SNL, and I took classes at Groundlings in Second City, and I'm attracted to comedians. In the past, I've always been friendly with comedians. David Spade and Kevin Neal. I don't know what it is. And even though I'm not one, I vibe with comedians. It is a world, and comedians are typically friends with other comedians. Is your friend group like civilians or you're both?
Both, but I have a lot. I do enjoy the company of comics. I mean, I do. When I go to a room and it's full of comics, we had a thing a couple nights ago at the Tropicana's closing, and so they had Brad Garrett and a whole bunch of comics over there, and I went over and just kind of, you know, everyone just kind of, you know, shot the shit and talked about, you know, the room, which I never really played that room. I never played the Tropicana, but it's a comedy club with a lot of, you know, stuff that's no longer going to be there. And so it was nostalgic, and it was so fun talking to, you know, Brad Garrett can read a phone book and make you laugh. He's just a funny guy.
Right.
And it was fun. Yeah. I love talking. I love comics are the, and you work off, you know, if you're thinking of something and you immediately get, you work off a bit and within seconds, you know, that's the old joke. Every comic, you know, 10 comics go to lunch within the first 5 minutes. Someone at the table is going to say, I'm going to use that, you know.
Because you have to call. Does it breed insecurity? And is it super competitive?
I've never felt insecure on comedians. Some in the same profession. I feel enlightened. I love, and to be a comic, they all have to be smart and they all have to be a certain style. And I know you feed off that. It's great. I mean, David Spade and I sitting here having lunch would be phenomenal. I would probably come up with 10 minutes of material for the show.
He's
lunch with him. Yeah. And a funny and nice guy too. So
I agree. He's amazing. I love him. He's a cool guy and really, really right. And is it exhausting though? Because everyone always has to be on, like everything has to be something every second.
You know what? The first few minutes of the lunch or the whatever that we're getting together is always, you know, a little sticky probably. And then it usually turns into for a bit just normal. No one cuts up jokes and tries to do their bit. That's for sure. Or we don't hang out with those guys. So, I mean, someone like a David Spade or a Brad Garrett, you know, they're pros. They're not going to sit down and do shtick all day. They'll do it for a minute. Brad will come in and say, oh, nice to see you. The thrift store is still doing good for you. You know, he'd right away rip on me. Yeah. Oh, I see you got my hair. You know, I see you still got the convertible. Good. You know, just things to rip on me. And
which is the best. Have you been roasted?
I've been roasted, yes, but not on a Carrot Top per se roast, but I've been unroasted where I got roasted, yes.
Got it.
One was Flavor Flav. I was on his roast and everybody was going after me. And I finally, it was my turn. I said, hey, we're roasting him. What the?
Jesus. You're very roastable.
Yes, I am. They love.
You're easy to cook.
I'm easy to cook.
You're lean meat. You know what I mean? You're easy to cook. Not a lot of fat. Chris Rock, when I was going up to do stand up, I was wise enough to text call the different comedians that I've met or know. And some of them, I'm not like best friends with them. And I know Kevin Neal and we know each other for sure, but like, we don't speak every day. And someone like him or Whitney or Kathy Griffin or Bridget, a bunch of people, I just asked everyone for their advice. Like, what would be advice you would give? Ellen said to be funny, which I thought was really amazing and helpful. But everybody gave me like a different sort of set of rules. Chris Rock jumps off the page because he said, make sure to have a beginning and an ending and the rest is just the flow. And he said it's an intimate sort of experience or sport and to not bring a lot of people, which I was attracted to, but Kathy Griffin was like, bring as many people as are going to make you feel good. And someone said, use the microphone as a prop. Someone else said, take away the stand. Like, there were just things that I could then, I'm a crowdsourcer, and then I end up deciding what I'm going to do. So even if someone's going to be at a wedding and they want to get up and give a non-shitty toast, like, if I had called you, what would you have told me? I'm going to do 5 minutes at the New York Comedy Club. And what would have been like tenets that you would have said to me?
Well, a lot of those would have been accurate. I would have said, well, first, if you've never done it before, I would say go to a stage somewhere and pretend once or twice and just kind of get the feeling of going up there and doing exactly what they said. You know, I'm lucky. I move around, so I don't hold the microphone. never have. I have a lav because I'm doing things. So I would figure out what's more comfortable first with the mic stand behind it, holding it, or take the mic stand and put it apart and just hold the mic and reference the, you know, the mics. I know a lot of comics that they rest their arm on it, or they use it as a prop, you know, they're driving the car and it's a stick shift or whatever they happen to be. That's how we do that with the Trump. Let's find out who's vice president. And I pull the thing. But Chris Rock is right on point about beginning and end. That's the most important thing. You got to get the beginning down because you got to get the crowd right away. And then you can and have fun with them. And then you got to get a way to get the hell out of there and be, you know, that was called your closer. You have to have a good closer. Right. So, yeah. And find out what it is that you're specifically want to talk about in that 10 minutes, because a lot, if comics are all over the place and they go up and they say, hey, I'm, you know, I'm single and whatever, I'm married to a guy and da, 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 and then it's funny. And then they go and they start talking about something. I don't know. I like a theme thing.
Non sequitur.
Yeah, non sequitur. So I like a little bit. For me, if it was a short amount of time, it would be a theme. Like my first bit I ever did ever was the whole bit. It was 10 minutes, was about stealing road signs. And so I opened up with a sign, and then it was almost like a slideshow. I just kept doing different road signs until I got done, and that was the whole bit. But and then the next time it grew on it, I said, now it'll be stealing signs and other objects. So I said, now they did the signs. Hey, how about this bank tube? And I was like, oh my God, you're stealing bank tube? Hey, you know, the airline oxygen mask on the plane. So it came up with, my whole show was kind of like thievery. But funny, like funny things to do with stolen stuff that you'd think. So I don't know. It just depends on what the style of comedy is. And
you're saying it could be as niche as possible. You're standing up at a wedding for 3 minutes. It could be as niche as possible, as long as you just connect whatever that thread is back to whatever you're talking about.
Yeah. And it could be a play on words, you know. I'm married to a guy named what? Like, to make any sense. You could do those kind of things where people like Kevin Nealon-ish. He's great.
Yeah.
Kevin's a brilliant comic. And he's just funny. You know,
Yeah. Some people just have their essence is funny.
Right. He just holds the mic. He holds the mic's funny. And he'll say, yeah, I just went to just hurt my knee playing basketball, not pro, you know, and it's just funny.
Right. That's the essence of someone. I guess it entails a lot of just the confidence in your own skin of standing there.
Absolutely confidence. And I would say to young comics, years of practice. I know it sounds an odd thing, but like when young comics say, you know, I'm going to do comedy. And they say, what do you want advice? I say, find a stage time somewhere. Like whether it's, I mean, I worked in strip clubs. I worked in restaurants. I worked anywhere. Mm-hmm. So just find a place that'll allow you to get on stage and work out your craft, work out what you're going to do. That's the most important part. Then you get down what your shtick, your style, and your, because that's where you're gonna learn even what your style is like. You know, your style might be high energy. Your style might be really mellow. Your style might be running all over the stage like I do.
I think that's as important as what you're saying.
My hair alone is, my hair alone is part of my product. I mean, you know, it's the look, you know?
Yep. It's interesting.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who are your favorite comedians? Like, who are you, like, into?
Yeah, growing up back then was George Carlin, Richard Pryor, of course, all the comics that worked on The Tonight Show, from Steve Martin to, you know, Gary Shandling. Oh, my God, he was funny. And Stephen Wright, you know, there's just so many comics that I would, and what I liked about them, too, was that they all really, all the ones you name are all different. Their style, what they talk about. You know, then you get a Bill Maher Bill Maher talks politics, but that's what makes him so different, because you go see Bill Maher and you know he's going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And he's brilliantly smart about it. And then you go see, you know, Howie, and Howie's just more goofy. And then you go see Carlin, and he's smart and angry. And, you know, Jim Gaffigan is just goofy. So it's like any kind of form of art, whether it be music or rock and roll. That's what makes it fun, is the uniqueness of each act. You know, you can go to a comedy club and see 20 different comics, and they're all going to be different, all different. You hope.
Do you find the threat of cancellation, that it's debilitating to have to even think about what you're going to say?
No.
Like, in this freedom, not at all.
No, and some comics probably would agree with me. I've never written anything that wasn't, or perform anything that was going to be in that category. Does that make sense? Like, everything
it's not risky. Just, that's not what you're talking about. That's just not who you are.
Right. I've never been risky guy, joke guy. Now, there's comics right now that are like, oh, crap. Yeah. Like, they can't write anything anymore, probably. Their whole act is gone. They can't do it because that's how they wrote. I have things that are on the cusp of... If people, some are not in the show anymore, but I go back in my warehouse and I think, oh my God, not only was this a great joke and it killed for, you know, but I wonder if that would be considered okay now. Like, it was funny then. And I did it on like Regis and Kathy Lee. Even.
Of course.
So it was like PG clean. But now would it be? So I never really wrote jokes anyhow that were going to be that way. I've always tried to just keep it silly, fun, No, very, and politics very light. And the only thing I do is a horrible Trump impression. So it's what makes it funny, because it's just so bad. It's bad that people, the more I do it, the more they'll, and I just pick a word and I just say, you know, I made that, you know, you just say coffee. I made coffee. There was tea, but there was no coffee. I made coffee. So it's
I want to come see your act. I love Vegas. I'm one of the few people that really like loves Vegas, and I want to come see your act.
I would love that.
In reading about you, for some reason, your financial situation is like newsworthy. People are surprised that you've made what they report or think. And I'm not going to be like,
right,
pry. I just mean you've made a lot of money. Is that from just consistent earning and the shows? Is it from investing, from diversity? Is it something unexpected? Real estate? Like, are you totally financially sound and you don't worry about money at all?
No, it's from bank robbing. I rob a lot of banks.
Well, that's a skill in and of itself.
I think that answer to that question is, yeah, I mean, just the initial answer to that would be definitely longevity of and working for, I haven't had a break since I started in 1985. And I mean, when I mean a break, like I've never stopped doing shows. Now the intensity of shows that I do now is more. I do six nights a week, 4 weeks, 1 week off, 4 weeks on average. This last month has been like 7-8 weeks on. And the week that I got off, I went on tour. So
are you a workaholic?
No, I am looking forward to my next break off in Florida. I am a workaholic though. Yes, I do work. I work more than any of my friends do. And you know, the residency alone here in Vegas at the Luxor is, you know, even my comic friends, like, you six nights a week, my God.
Wow.
Like,
that sounds insane. But is it that you love it? Is there any fear of irrelevance? Is it any fear of financial distress?
No, I love it. And that's what the hotel wants. They want a full-time guy. And I have no problem being the full-time guy. But I am the first one to tell you, you know, I get my week off, I'm gone. And I need that to re-energize. But you know, we just did road shows and that was fun. But you know, you get a week off or you want to go on the road and do shows. I'm like, well, I'd rather go home. But then I also said, I haven't been on the road in a while. I'll get on a tour bus and do the whole nine yards. It was also good for me and my crew to kind of do that, to keep you, you know, like you said, the relevant, keep yourself working. You know, I work a lot here too, but the road shows are really challenging because you don't do the Vegas show when you're in Modesto. Right. You know, right. If you're in Modesto, California, you just walk, hey, it's good to be in Vegas. Like, huh? So you have to
change.
But
that's where you're exercising. That's where exercising the muscle, right?
Right. Absolutely. And that's what makes it fun. And it's challenging. You know, people are like, they saw the show and they were like, wow, that's a whole different show. And I'm like, yeah. And you got to remember it and kind of have an outline, and you can bounce in and out of it and do something from the Vegas show, but it's got to have a theme that, you know, you made it just for this town. So I go to town, I go into the town I go get lunch somewhere, and then I take my crew and we go around and we take pictures or videos of something in the town. And then we put it in the show. So the crowd goes crazy, you know?
That's one of the things I was going to say before that I've noticed. Like, if I go do a speaking engagement for 1,000 people, even though I'm quote unquote not a comedian, if you bring up something that like you saw that day or that happened or that's happened in their town, they really just feel special. They love that. So
yeah, they know that you went out of the way it's a special moment for them that you went out of the way to know about their town.
And that it's fresh. And that it's fresh.
Right. Right.
This is the age where for me, it feels like you only want to do the things you want to do, but the tables are still hot and you realize that you're like, not on borrowed time, but like a career being relevant for so many years, you wouldn't think that at your age or at my age, like you'd still be so in demand. So I feel like you kind of want to ride it because you know the tables will go cold and that's when you'll walk out. I mean, is that kind of, do you feel that way too? Like it's still going. So I might as well, it's not going to be going forever. Trees don't grow to the sky. So I might as well just, you know, ride it.
Yeah, ride it and have fun. And that's what I'm trying to say in my world, you know, and I say it to myself almost every day, similar things like, you know, I'm 59 and I have 6 years left in the contract. It makes me 65 when I get done with the contract. We just had a thing last night. My manager's like, would you sign again? I said, well, I don't know. I'm not there yet. Like, you know, 5 years ago when they asked me, I said, I'm not re-signing. When I turned 50, I was going to say 55, I was going to not quit, but I was going to slow down like the speed limit.
It's pretty amazing that at 59, you have a contract till 65. Like I have to say, like, that's pretty awesome.
It is. And frightening.
Yeah.
It's like Buddy Hackett, another great comic. I met him years and years ago and he was at the airport and I said, oh my God, I won't bother you. But like Buddy Hackett, you know, like genius.
Right.
And he said, hey, kid, you know, Carrot Top. And he was, I think he knew who I was, but he said, I'm going to give you some advice. And I said, oh, please, I would love that. So he took a napkin in the lounge at the airport and he wrote down the key to the treasure is the treasure. And he gave it to me. And I got on the plane. I was like, what is he, drunk? And my friend says, what did he write? I said, the key to the treasure is the treasure. And then my friend says, oh, no, actually, that's pretty profound. Try to figure out what that means. And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, break it down. I think I figured it out. So I kept looking at it. And I said, I guess it's just so generalized, but the key to the treasure, like the key to life, the key to what you want, key to what you're holding is what you're holding. So I looked at it like, oh,
like the journey. It's about the journey, not the destination. Yeah, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, right. The key to the journey is the journey. And that's exactly how I took it. So I said, oh, that's actually pretty cool. Like, enjoy what you're doing right now. You're doing this. You started doing this when you were like 18 years old. And you're actually doing what you wanted to do. You're doing it. You pulled it off.
Right.
Enjoy it. So that's what I try to figure every night when I go on stage. I try to put on, of course, every comic says that, but not, I know a lot of comics don't. Or entertainers for that matter, that I'm very like every show is the first time you've done it kind of thing. And the audience is savvy. They'll see through it. They know. And you get up there and you're like last night, like having fun and really this girl in front gave me this beautiful carrot, diamond encrusted carrot, my logo and diamond encrusted. It was beautiful. So I was like, look what my fans did. Like how, and the crowd was like, oh my God, you know. But if I had gotten that, I mean, tossed it and said, thanks for my fucking, you know.
You're grateful and you're present.
Really, like, wow, that took hours to make, you know. And it gives you a little light, a little bit of fun. And you look out there and people are, you know, some people in the audience, something else I learned about, you know, people could be going through really bad stuff. I know that sounds like cliche and whatever, but and so many times I've come off stage and someone said, you know, I lost my dad today.
Yep.
And I didn't know what to do. So I figured I'd go see you because you would make me laugh. And I'm like, wow. A lot of times that happens. Or they just was 2 weeks before the show, there was a meet and greet. And this lady said, we're all there. And she said, should we tell you? And I said, tell me what? They said, you know, last time we were here, mom was here and she loved you. And here's a picture for her buying your t-shirt. And I'm like, I remember her. She goes, well, she's no longer with us. And the reason we came is because of her that night. And, you know, so we're here to celebrate her. And I'm like, man, it's nice to know that because when you get out there, you kind of think of that when you're doing it, like make it special, you know?
Individual moments of meaning. I was doing this appearance in Australia and in Melbourne, a woman came up and she couldn't keep it together and she was crying and she had a neurological issue and vertigo and all these things. She hadn't been able to leave for 2 years and she's a massive fan. And she said that she wanted to get to New York at some point to see me when I had been speaking, but she felt that me coming to Australia was New York coming to her, and she hadn't left her house for 2 years. Like, and to be present, to take that moment. And I ended up putting together a whole gift, asking to get her information. She thought that she'd obviously never hear from me, and sent her this gift the next day. And like, she posted about it and she couldn't believe it. And like different things. Like I was at a restaurant last week and these two girls came up and the security person, one of them got a picture with me and the security person, you know, said to them like, and then they left. And I've been thinking ever since about the poor other girl who didn't get the picture. It's not fair. The one friend got the picture. Like, I'll obsess over something so strange like that. Like, someone comes up, you're mid-bite. You're like, do you mind if we just wait till I finish, you know, eating? And then you don't see them again. And then I feel bad that, like, I should have just been, like, mid-broccoli bite and taken a picture, even though it's fair to want to finish your meal. Like, I'll think about things like that because it means so much to them in their day. And I don't want to make that other girl feel stupid she didn't get the picture. So it's weird the things that you'll, like, just, like, notice or think about and being present with those people that it does have a lot of meaning, to your point.
Yeah, very true.
Really? Really, really interesting. Wow. You are so, I just love the show because like I get to, you know, you're Carrot Top. Like that's like two words. It's a name. It's a person I've seen in the past. It's the guy with the red hair. Like, well, you know, you're a comic. Now I, you know, feel like I know you. You're very deep and interesting and smart and funny. So, and nice. So
I'm very
grateful to meet you. And I'd love to come to your show when I come to Vegas.
Yeah, that'd be super. I would love you to be there. I mean, it's fun just as because the live show is so different than what people see on TV, which doesn't mean it's not good or bad. It's just, that's the number one comment. Like, man, I've always seen you and never seen you live. Wow. It's like an edge to it. It's a good energy.
Well, because sometimes you have to be what they hire you to be, which is what they want you to be, what the people want you to be.
Yeah. Every show would never let me do stand up. I mean, never.
Right.
I said, wouldn't that be funny, Jay, after all the years of doing that? It wasn't really Jay. Jay had no problem with it. It was the producer. But I said, you know, I'd done the Tonight Show like 35 times. And I said, I'm always on and I come out with my box. What if I came out and I have the box, but I don't open it? And the whole crowd's like waiting, and I'm just doing all my stand up. And then the last one, I go to pick it and I just shut the box and I go, all right, we'll see you. And it was going to be so cool. Jay loved the idea, but the producer's like, no, you know, I think they want to see the props. So I go, the stories are going to be just as good as the props. I'm telling you. But
right.
Like I grew up, you know, like I grew up, I graduated. I went, you know,
you're allowed to evolve into something different. You're allowed to. That's why the Vegas show sounds like it's great for you. And you are private about your relationship, which I respect. Have you ever had kids, or you never had kids?
I have no kids. No.
Okay. I just want to make sure I didn't miss anything.
If I do, oh shit, where are they?
I don't know. They're probably in the audience, and we'll see. This is the redheads in the audience. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for talking to me. I was excited about doing this.
You were? Did you know who I was?
Yes, of course. I know all about you.
Really?
And you're very smart on top of all that, too. You're very smart. So I was excited.
I appreciate that. I always wonder, like, is this guy going to even know who the hell I am? Like, why is she calling me to be on the show? Oh, good. No. Awesome. Well, I'm going to hit you up, and it'll be such an interesting, when I take a picture with you and Flavor Flav, people will be like, this is who you hang out with, Carrot Top and Flavor Flav. You're so unique.
It's so great. No, I know. People love that.
I'm so cool. Awesome. All right. I'll see you soon.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye, Scott. Bye, Scott. I'm calling you Scott.
Yeah. Bye, Bethany.
All right. Bye.
Cheers.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.